In a civilized society, people are more open-minded to realize that as long as you live in, things happen, and things happen that you don't expect.
Yes.
And even happen to some of the people who feel they are too proud, because Barbados fooled a lot of people with false pride, which they say want their projected image, really, and really not. And they're not sympathetic. But they want people to be sympathetic towards them.
How many years have you been out there now?
I've been on the street for a good couple of years.
A good couple of years. What shocked you most?
What shocked you most?
Yeah.
No. I think that the more shocking thing to be on the street is the reaction of people who still, like, they're still at home, they're still in position of a job, whatever. They don't have no psychological problem. They can't identify with you when you try to explain to them your situation. Or what makes it more harder is people that you grew up around who know you pretty well. They wish best for you. They wish the best for you. But they don't have the time to sit and talk with you and find out, man, to ensure what's going on with you, man. They walk past you like you don't exist. Hmm. They look at you in derogatory.
But there wasn't.
They said bad things.
But you know, there was a time when you weren't on the street. And other people were there.
Yes.
Were you any different in the way that you responded? And if
yes. Because I was raised a certain way and I traveled, so I am more sympathetic than need. I see Beijing people, like, I'll give another example. You got a lot of people that are old, they can barely struggle, they have nobody to come shopping with them, they have shopping. And they have the stoplights. I seen her yesterday, a 92-year-old woman. She was begging for help. The woman walked past her, I had to take her across the street. It is just the mentality of Beijing and the misconception of the way Beijing's see the world or see the existence of human beings. How? It's something that I think come from way back in the old time days, that is a traditional way of false pride and not being sympathetic to each other. It's something that's built in the culture of the people. That's a big problem.
As you look down the road,
yeah.
What do you see as your future?
My future is owning a farm. Nobody can stop me from doing that but me. That's one thing I can tell you for sure at this moment. But before, I was in a very much very deep depression, frustrated with myself and society. So now I am feeling a lot better. I've got the various and homeless society here. If I need somebody to talk to, I have good people here to come and talk to. And I feel that in the near future, and I have other people like that, my churches that I go for assistance and help or mentoring. So I see myself, I'm a very strong-minded person. But you know what? There are some people who have they need someone to talk to because they get like too stressed out with situations. I'm one of those kind of people.
That's you.
So I see things like people like you can play a better role if you can emphasize the situation. Have people to come on that in position to discuss the psychological effects of people who are disenchanted, like as you said, people in marriages, because a lot of these people are bad relationship with women. Men in Barbados have to learn to respect women. I feel there's a big part of the problem too. They don't have respect for each other. And that is what's called in a lot of broken relationships. So you find a lot of men, like early in the morning, 5 o'clock, you find a lot of old men at the bus terminal drinking rum every morning. They are not demanding to a parole through Nelson Street.
Caused by what? What causes that?
Excuse me?
What causes that?
What caused that? Because a lot of them are over 40 and 50. They have nobody, neither family nor wife or spouse, because of how the mentality of their existence in this country, how the system portrays our culture. I feel that politicians and stuff sell this culture short, and people
in
perspective, this is not of the vagrants.
Agreed. But how do they sell
perspective? This? But how we see, I travel, I see life.
How do we sell it short?
The societies sell women short, and men sell themselves short, but there's no natural love for each other. Is all about money and fantasy and these kind of things. I think that we need to re-educate women in Barbados and also men so that they could be more caring to the needs of young people, old people.
Let me, I need to zero in on that. I'm trying to understand exactly how we would manifest that love and care to each other. What so would we need to do differently? I mean, you've had the experience.
We need more talk shows. We need things put in place to re-educate young people from school. You need people like people who people go through these situations here, like what I'm going through, to go to schools and talk to young girls and boys and people who have HIV that find themselves sick, not because they want to be sick, things happen in life, to go to schools, carry children, young children from schools to the place like the QAH, the HIV center, where they can see for a chance if they behave in a manner which is unhealthy, this is what is going to happen. We do not do these things, take them to prisons, but we want to choose a specific group of children. It is not a specific group, because any group of persons are many different groups. I know a lawyer that's on the street, he was a top lawyer. I know people with soldiers. All kind of people are on the street suffering.
Well, I want to say thank you very much for taking the time and sharing your own experience with us. And I mean, you are one of these people who clearly you walk the walk. You didn't just talk the talk. And therefore, there are many people who would have been enlightened by what you've shared with us today. Clearly, this is a growing problem in this country which really needs to be addressed. And I sincerely hope that just spending these few minutes with you all will help to bring this more to the fore on the national agenda. This is not just about the attacks, which may very well come to an end if they hold two or three people. This is about a growing problem in Barbados that we sincerely hope will be addressed very soon. And it's one of the things I hope that these people who are talking about politics and leadership and that sort of thing would recognize needs to be addressed as well. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon. Welcome to the program. This person said that the people who were speaking earlier were really coherent and that they struggle to give homeless people money when they sound coherent and look strong enough to work. Now, that is what the man was talking about earlier. Huh? And I sought to reflect that in some of the questions that I posed to them, because when people come here, I also hear the other comments that are often made off the air by people who say, you know, you're big, you're young, you're strong, you should be able to do better than that. I ain't giving you no money. I only give money to old people. Unless you can take my money and go and buy drugs. You know, that's the kind of sentiment that the culture has thrown up quite a lot. So this person then went on to say, I think that family relationships, barring drug abuse, are a major cause of displacement because some people just can't get along. And they can't get along not only in families, but, you know, outside of the family, there's a lot of conflict as well. And that's why I was pressing on the question of what more can be done to help people avoid the situation where they feel more comfortable living on the streets than staying home with their parents. Now, we have a lot of young people today who don't leave home, but they are in highly conflictual situations with their parents because in many instances, they want to do their own thing in their own way. Sometimes parents complain that they don't even do anything around the house. They work and don't want to make a contribution. And the question really comes down to what is reasonable. And sometimes people can walk away when they are being unreasonable. And sometimes they can stay when the other people in the house are being unreasonable to them. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You are on the air. Welcome to the program. Hello. 4341790. Hello, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Am I on? You hear me now?
Yes, please.
Right. I want to find out from you, David, as a person who may have statistics over the years. With this calling program and all the issues that were highlighted by Barbadians all over, can you tell me if anything at all has been done to any issue by the powers that be?
Well, it depends upon what you call an issue. I know that we have had many scenarios here where people have complained about community issues, things that were happening that needed to be fixed, that sort of thing. And there has been that kind of response. Now, if you're looking at macro issues like the economy or the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, then it's been a bit more challenging. And some of those issues have also been fixed. But the bigger, the broad picture may still remain because of the general economic situation, one. Two, the way that we as a people respond to a lot of the problems around us as well.
Well, you know, David, if all Barbadians were to go and picket in front of the Parliament building about any particular issue, you still can't get the minds of people to change to suit you when you want how you want.
Why do you think that is so?
Well, check all the other times you had picketing for various reasons. How much came out of it? Because, you see,
how do we respond as people to problems that we believe that need to be fixed?
As people, the first thing you got to do is have a coming together, a serious coming together. And if a nation comes together on any issue, I believe that is something that would have to be done or forced to be done.
Mm.
Now, there, for instance, the guy with the homeless people crying out this long time for at least somewhere to put them. There, we have a lot of houses. I choose to say houses, but I really call them matchboxes that built all over this country, in parish land, in Constant, and wherever, that nobody is occupying. And we still have a problem of housing homeless people. Now, I didn't say you just go and house people like that, but the root causes and all these things, and if there could be any reconciliation and whatsoever, I could understand. But we got a lot of matchboxes sitting around Barbados that have nobody in them, and all of that was built from the treasury's purse.
Okay, well, let me say to you that I'm told that Minister Steve Blackett is on the telephone line. And let's hear his perspective on this problem. As discussed a short while ago, Mr. Blackett, good morning, or good afternoon, rather.
Good morning to you, David. How are you doing?
I am well, and you?
I'm doing badly, thank you. Yes, I was driving in my car, and I was drawn to my attention that someone was making the case that government is doing absolutely nothing or very little for the homeless, especially men, because they're mostly men, who are afflicted or affected by homelessness in Barbados. So I just want to refute that charge and to tell you that, and to tell you or to apprise you of what government is doing for the elderly. Of course, we have
not
to... the homeless, sorry. Because this ministry, which I have the responsibility for, really superintends all cases to deal with elderly, the disabled, and of course homeless people and that kind of thing. So that is why I got my wires crossed there. But regarding the homeless men especially, because this mostly afflicts homeless men in Barbados. We have a facility, as you probably would know, at the Clyde Gollop Center. We accommodate 34 men there. On a nightly basis. We would all expect, or we would all wish for, an expanded facility to facilitate more people in our accommodation there. But this center alone costs the government of Barbados between $500,000 and $600,000 a year to maintain. And we all know that we are operating under some tight fiscal constraints. And therefore, we have to look at the bottom line when it comes to spending more or facilitating more men in what accommodation the government has to offer. So, like I told you, over $500,000 we spend on that shelter alone. We accommodate 34 men there. The men at present, they come there in late evening after they make their rounds around, especially British Town. We facilitate them with a meal when they come there. They have accommodation and facilities there so they can have a shower, they can shave, they can sleep, and in the morning then they can leave again. what we have instituted as of the 1st of May, I have instructed the board, and they have acceded to my request, to operate the center on a 24-hour basis. This was long in coming, but of course, you know, as long as you extend the hours, this would call on more financing to be allocated to the center. And I'm sure that we have, now that we've moved from just the sleeping hours between 6 and 6 the next morning and moving to 24 hours, this is going to, of course, jack up the cost of $500,000 to $600,000 to probably close to about $800,000, because we now have to provide three meals for the men and better and more accommodation while they're there on a 24-hour basis. Because we feel that we should not turf them out in the morning, that they should, of course, if they don't want to go, they can stay there for the entire day.
Mr. Black,
so that is what yes.
When we spoke about this problem a short while ago, there mm-hmm. clearly is an indication that the problem is growing.
Mm-hmm.
The figures that were given to us by Mr. Safri are in the vicinity of 500 people or so now on the streets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Your 34 men at the Clyde Gollop Center is but a drop in the bucket when you look mm-hmm. at the bigger problem. And that is what we need to get a sense of from you. How have mm-hmm. you seen this problem of homelessness grow? What is the trend that we are seeing? And how does Barbados respond to this growing problem? Now, this came up this morning because yet again, homeless men claim that they have been attacked and robbed in Queen's Park, and that they are exposed and are vulnerable and feel that their lives may well be at risk. So this is the crux of the issue. 34 men at the Clyde Gollop Center cannot be enough when it comes to dealing with this, the magnitude of this growing problem. Many of these men are said to be people who can't get along with people at home, had broken marriages, drugs, and that sort of thing. We're not getting a sense of a policy and an overall approach. How do you integrate the private sector with the public sector? How do you justify not giving any money whatsoever to some place like this Homeless and Vagrant Society, which to many other people has been doing a laudable job in trying to fix the problem? All of these are real issues that I'd like you to address.
Now, Mr. Ellis, I appreciate the fact that you acknowledge that the problem you're having with the homeless men is because of some social dislocations that are happening in their domestic setting for one reason or the other. It is a real problem. It is a problem that we acknowledge, and it is a problem that we are quite aware of. That is where the genesis of the problem occurs. Sometimes in the domestic setting, where they can't get on with their family members, or for one reason or the other, they did not provide for themselves in the latter stages of their lives. I mean, that is a problem, a separate problem altogether, that we can deal with. Some of these men are not even recipients of old age pension, contributable old age pension, because some of them worked, but they did not contribute to old age pension. All of those are the features of what...
Now, how many of them are young men rather than old men? Because these guys who got attacked are young men.
Yeah, but most of the problems, why they are on the street, living by the Independence Square and all over, because of social dislocation that occurred within the domestic setting.
And?
So, what we have done, I don't want to go so deeply into what we are doing in reaching out and extending our arms to embracing other organizations within
why would you not want to say
because
that?
Because it is a sensitive issue, and I've heard Mr. Safri, and I have deliberately stayed away from it, because Mr. Safri is making a case against government that if I have to speak truthfully to the matter, it will not end so well. So I am not going to speak to the thousands of dollars that we have contributed towards Mr. Safri's organization, and the thousands of dollars that he receives from private sector organizations. I am not going to speak to that because it will not end so nicely.
But isn't this issue to be seen as one that is wider than just any one organization. We are talking about how, if you feel disillusioned in your relationship with one, then clearly one would expect that the government would be facilitating this kind of outreach on the part of others. So what is being done in that regard? Because right now it seems as though, it comes across as though too little is being done to work together with the private sector or the non-governmental organizations like that. I've seen a lot of private sector interests go out there and feed the hungry and stuff in the morning and in the afternoon. I mean, anytime we're in town, we can see that. So I need to get your perspective on the magnitude of the problem and how you believe we can tackle it.
But David, I want to tell you that the homeless men, this is, you see, you have to appreciate government's constraints when it comes to supplying money for all of these things.
Yes.
But under the superintendence of the National Assistance Board, under which the Clyde Gollop Center falls, we have three other properties, which we have to expend close to another $500,000 each. We have the Lancaster House that a lot of people don't know about, that falls directly under the administration of the National Assistance Board. We accommodate fire victims and persons who suffer from other forms of natural or other disasters. We have the Vauxhall Senior Citizens Village, where we accommodate close to about 35 or 40 elderly people over there at that facility. Another $600,000. We have the Jorish Dunner Center over in the Pine, where we have accommodation for daycare for our elderly.
But the problem is in Bridgetown. The big problem is in Bridgetown. And
yeah,
therefore...
But you cannot isolate it, David.
No, I'm not isolating it. If there are about 500 homeless people in Barbados, you know that Bridgetown gets the bulk of that. And what is missing here, what is missing... Yes, there are centers, but you know the psychology of a lot of these people. They don't want to be confined in a center. That is why men can be robbed in Queen's Park, because at 7 o'clock at night, they're not in a center. They're out on the street. We see them sleeping on the side of the streets. So the question is, what mix of approaches can you... We accept your point that the government can't do it all. So as we look towards... In this coming election campaign, is this going to be addressed by you all? A new plan, a new approach for dealing with this?
Look, I have also asked, as a matter of fact, just recently I was speaking to the chairman of the National Assistance Board, Dr. David Jurat, where I've asked him, along with the board members, to start to look at the possibility of seeking out some additional accommodation within the Bridgetown environs. Now, of course, all of this would have to be planned carefully, because, again, it's going to call on governments to call on government's coffers to cough up
the
money.
What's the trend that you are seeing? Based on the number of men who... In the time that you've been minister responsible for this area, how have you seen this problem grow?
Well, from a casual look of the people who actually present at the feeding stations around Bridgetown, we can see that there has been an increase in the number of...
Do you have statistics? You have no stats?
I don't have the statistics there with me.
Okay.
I don't have...
All right. But based on the trend, what is your ministry anticipating will be the problem for Barbados? Because this... You spoke already about the amount of money, $500,000 to $600,000 per year to maintain one center. When
That's
you pull
right.
everywhere, all them centers together, it's astronomical. It's got to be. We're against
Absolutely.
The background of the constraints. But critical in all of this is, where are we going? Within another 5 years, based on this trend, what do you anticipate?
But it is a problem that not only government can address, because like I told you, the genesis of this problem is the social dislocation that is occurring within those individual men's domestic space. We have to appreciate
that. So how
would
you intervene there? You must be talking about something that is aimed at providing some kind of intervention. Kemar Safri's organization, he says he only got 4 staff, but he's got people who are associated with that kind of effort. Government must have more.
I would want to tell you that if this administration has anything to do with it, if you're going to form any kind of association or relationship with any NGO, it will not be Mr. Safri's organization. It will have to be some other organization that comes on board.
Yes, but you all fight. You seem to have a fight between the two of you. But in the meantime, it's those people out there who are suffering. And what I'm trying to put to you and give you the opportunity to speak to is an overarching policy that goes beyond merely setting up the housing, which says, look, we understand that there are problems in people's homes. This man who said he had a problem that caused him, he suffered depression and came out on the street. How many more people out there may be facing that? And where do they turn when it comes to government to be able to get the necessary guidance, assistance, and therapy to avoid that? That's the kind of vision that I'm asking you for.
Yeah, but you're speaking like there are no interventions.
But tell us what they are. That's all I'm asking you to do. And going forward, what more do you think we need?
I'll tell you something about a program that we have within the Ministry of Social Care, where we have actually intervened into households. We ran a pilot project about in 2011, the Icy Bridge Project. And I don't know if you would have heard of it. This is an interventionist project that we identified one house in each of the constituencies. So there were 30 households actually in the pilot project at the beginning. Since then, we have rolled out two other phases of that particular project. What we are doing
with
here...
With what measure of success?
Tremendous success. So let me tell you what we are going for. We are looking at what we call intergenerational poverty. That is the kernel of the problem, where the scourge of poverty has afflicted several households over generations. So for successive administrations have been throwing money at poverty with some successes, limited in some cases, overwhelming in other cases. But what we have done, we have eyeballed a project out of Chile. We actually sent some our social workers from the ministry there to eyeball this project and, of course, to transpose it into Barbados, taking into consideration all of the norms and nuances.
So where's the success?
The success is tremendous, I'll tell you.
Let me see. Tell us what you've got to show that.
Out of the program, since the inception from the pilot phase, 120 families have graduated out of that project, out of that program.
How? How do you measure graduation? Because you got to graduate out of poverty.
Let me tell you what it is. IC is an acronym. Identification, stabilization, enablement, and empowerment.
So what does that have to do with the kind of intervention that we were talking about to stop men from ending up on the street and increasing the number of people who are a burden to the state and are a challenge to the society?
Because within those same 30 households that I'm talking about, and there are more than 30 now, like I said, there are 120 families that have been affected positively by this program. And those same households are men who without this program, would have found themselves in the same situation where these homeless men are now located.
So your view is that it is poverty that is causing this?
In some cases, I'm not saying all, there are several cases of social dislocation. There's a phenomenon in Barbados that we don't really examine. It is that sometimes men don't get on with their children and they don't get on with their wives. Sometimes when the children build out the house and expand it and put in all the other amenities to improve the house, this father, who was recalcitrant and did not look after his children, are put out in the yard to live. You must know of this, David. And because some of these men are put out in the yard to live, sometimes they leave the entire dwelling and go and seek lodging elsewhere.
Okay, we got to leave you now, Minister, because you got the news coming up. But if you want to come back a little later and engage with the public, because I think members of the public would have their own questions on this, but because it is an important issue, then you can stay with us for a while. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning, good afternoon. You're on the air, 4341790. You know, sometimes people hold on so long and then they end up moving away. Hello?
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I am fine. Can I ask Minister Stephen Blackett a question?
I don't know if he's still here.
I hope he is.
I don't think he is. He's gone.
He's gone. I just wanted to know, David, and maybe you can find out from Mr. Safran, when homeless people are on welfare, where do they collect their checks?
Well, I believe they're hearing the question so they can answer.
Okay, is Mr. Safran on there?
No, he is not.
Okay, well, I would really like to know because I met with some homeless people down in Jubilee Gardens, and they told me they don't have any access to their welfare checks. It goes directly to the home. They don't get any money. I just want that clarified.
Okay.
Because if it is so, it shouldn't be. Another problem. The other day, when you were on, I think, I brought up the Auditor General's report. Then someone responded to me on social media that it was presented by the Auditor General to the House of Assembly. However, that day, Mara Thompson was the speaker, and she refused to allow it and the PAC to be heard. Why? Why? This is just before an election. You know, we need to know. Yes, we can decide on the previous Auditor General's report, and I want to let the people out there know you don't have to be a mathematician or an accountant to understand. All you have to do is read the Auditor General's recommendations and the irregularities he highlighted in his Auditor General's report. That's all. You don't have to deal with no big figures. It's common sense.
Okay.
It is not difficult. Please, people, try and get, even if you don't get, well, we should have it. I don't understand, but you should know, David. You should know. You're a media practitioner. You should know why that Auditor General's report for financial year ending March 31st,
you're sure it's the 40. Auditor General? Hold on, you're not talking, you're not accurate, you know. It's not the Auditor General's report, the annual report. This was a PAC report.
No. They're two different things, and I know that. Please. I know that there's two different reports. I know about the public accountant's report, and then there's also an audit. Usually about around this time, it's been handed over to the House of Assembly by March whatever of the following year. It's handed over. I just want to know where it is. That's all I want to know. There's two accounts. Let's not get it twisted. Two. I want to know where the second one is.
Okay. A couple of comments here. And, you know, you just can't shield people from some of the comments that are raised here. This person is suggesting that the Minister of Agriculture really needs to keep quiet. He said nothing about the crisis and now wants, and this would be a reference to the sewage crisis, and now wants to address the issue from a political platform. The person says utter rubbish and disrespect to all persons affected by this situation. Then another person says, hello, David, why can't the Agriculture Minister not speak to us in a news conference? It's our money being used on the project. We are the taxpayers. On a political platform, I am unlikely to take him too seriously, and that applies across the board to the manner in which ministers deal with issues of national importance. Then this other person says that, was that a veiled threat from a government minister or Mr. Safri on brass tacks a minute ago? Well, I don't know that it was veiled. He said basically that based upon the experience that they have had together, he is not going to be working with Mr. Safri if his government has anything to do with it. So clearly the two of them are loggerheads for one reason or another. down to brass tacks. It is unfortunate because, you know, I think many people in Barbados and outside regard the work of Mr. Safri as being positive, but the minister implies that, as far as he's concerned, all is not well, and they don't have those details. Hello?
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
All right, fine. You know, I have to be roasting now. I'm roasting red.
Yeah.
I'm literally roasting red. Everything is going the way.
Well,
I
the truth
is, look.
Let me tell you something.
I'm not canvassing
I'm just making it clear to you. I'm not here to entertain BLP and DLP people roasting red or roasting yellow and blue. Please deal with the issue.
But Mr. Ellis, everybody said that I'm roasting red.
I am not here to encourage your campaigning, please.
Anyway, Mr. Ellis, I don't want to waste your time. I do not want to hear anything from Dr. David Estwick, and I can tell you why. Dr. David Estwick's behavior resembles that of a political hypocrite. The taxpayers of Barbados are paying this minister. And we have been calling for him since January to speak to Barbados about the Stahl factory project, to speak to us on a regular basis and to update the residents and business people on the South Coast regarding the situations and how things are going. The Barbados Water Authority has claimed to have dug some wells, and I don't know if they're digging their way to hell or what, but it seems that the wells have been dug, specimens have been sent overseas for testing, and you've heard nothing more. There's rumor on the ground that they have tapped into water, and that is the reason why the wells cannot be used. Nothing at all from this minister. But he's asking Barbadians to come to Waterford on Sunday evening to hear about...
But you don't have to go...
If you
just began by saying you really don't want to hear anything from him. So if you don't want to hear anything from him, you don't have to go?
Yeah, but that's only the one here.
Full stop.
Because how am I, as the person said in the letter just now, these are national issues that you should have called a press conference. When I hijack CBC, okay, you should have called a press conference and speak to the people. The minister does not go up the South Coast. He does not collaborate with the people up there. He has been in hiding for several months. I do not want to hear any.
Well,
and I am calling on Barbadians to punish ministers like him at the polls.
Okay, let's move on. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You on the air? 4341790. This is down to brass tacks. Are you there? Okay. Punish people at the polls. That's something I've heard, a theme I've heard coming from some people here. But as I said, we go beyond the mere attacks on individuals. Look more specifically at the issues. I think it is a genuine matter of saying, look, we've had this matter going on for quite some time. And, you know, I don't even think that the news conference is the central thing. I mean, more importantly, I think you could have had a town meeting with the people who live in that neighborhood and, you know, interact with them. I don't think, I believe there was one such meeting down there, but then the political directorate, my recollection is the political directorate might not have been there at the time. people are very worried about that project, the situation that it finds itself in. For all the talk, though, I mean, you could stand up and talk about it, but if after several weeks you find that the situation appears to be going from bad to worse, and that all the things that you said that you were going to do are not making a positive difference, then merely talking about it is not enough. You can come and talk about how bad it was from the very beginning and all of that. And that, to me, if you inherit something and you know that it's defective, Well, the first order of business is that you come to the public and you say it is defective, number one. And having established that it is defective, you come and you say, look, and these are the steps that we are taking to correct it. You don't leave it defective. Add more stress to it. And then when it blows up, then you come and tell the public, oh, it was defective from the very beginning. Once you inherit it as such, you then are expected to fix the problem. Otherwise, you know it is going to get worse. Now, to me, that's common sense. That is plain common sense. Now, I also recognize that sometimes there are people in this country who don't like you to think logically. And therefore, if you identify that as a weakness in the whole process, you are condemned for having identified it as a weakness. But whether they like it or not, it is so. And don't insult my intelligence by telling me that it was like that from the start. We expect you to deal with it. And as it stands right now, the big question is, how radical will the approach have to be to fix it? Will we eventually have to shut down the South Coast almost immediately? Because whatever we do, we have to make sure that we don't run into the next winter season with this. Now, this person wants to ask a question. Why don't you shut down the program, since today everything seems political from your perspective, except for Kimar Safri? I mean, this is the height of the political season. Give people a bit of latitude. To do what? They have enough latitude. If you know full well that within the whole scheme of what's happening on the South Coast, what's happening with the economy, you have enough latitude to discuss those things. I do not understand what you are asking for. As long as you can't get in here and start saying how many times you can vote for the Labour Party or for the Democratic Labour Party, you don't know how to express yourself around the issues, get smart. I'm not going to agree with you on that. That is nonsensical talk. This is down to brass tacks.